as we start the question and answer panel, it's very obvious to me that there's a consensus that came from this particular panel, and it was summed up by a gentleman that I heard speak at the OREG conference that some of you attended in Annapolis Basin. And he talked about three doors to the renewable energy challenge. He said door one was to go big, be transformative. Door two was incremental, measured success, measured change. And door three, this was the status quo with a sign out front that said, you made a big mistake, go back to door one. And so that's my hope. That's where Maine, I think, is.
On June 18, 2009, at Energy Ocean 09 at the Samoset Resort in Rockport, Maine, the 11 panelists from the State of Maine Roundtable on Efforts to Promote Renewable Ocean Energy Projects had a question and answer period.
What we'd like to do now is take, because of the time we have left, take any questions up from the audience to any of the members of the panel. And there are microphones set up on the far on each of the rows. Any questions? We were that good, huh?
I have a question. Speaking of free flow energy, it's evident that Maine, you know, has a motivation, commitment, and resources to become the leader in offshore wind. One of the key barriers to ocean energy is risk. Until this risk is reduced, you know, financing is going to continue to be challenging. I guess I propose, and I'm not sure how many federal statutes or laws would be broken by this, but after the successful implementation of these test sites, would there be a possibility of Maine taking a leadership role in coordinating with the state and federal organizations to actually develop sites to the point of commercial development and deployment? And then they could actually sell those sites, and the risk would, the prices would be fixed, and the risk would be reduced. So then the financing would be much more available because they could spread that cost out over the life of the project.
I can't tackle that in detail, but I do know that last week the president offered a vision for ocean development. And it didn't use the word zoning or that kind of thing, but it sort of sounded like that when you read his proclamation. And I think one of the answers to this is to take all the mountains of data that we have and, in effect, pre-permit sites and say, here's where the whales are, we're not going there. Here's where the lobsters spawn, we're not going there. Here, and bird migratory patterns. In other words, we have a whole lot of data. Habib mentioned a couple hundred layers of GIS data. And I believe as a developer, not in an offshore development, but in any development, if you can sort of clear the brush away in advance and say, we don't want you here, but over here, you know, meet these criteria, and in Maine we call it permit by rule, and you could go. But that's going to take a huge commitment by the federal agencies to work together with each other and also with the state. My sense is that the Secretary of Energy and the President understand the concept and also the urgency. So we'll see what unfolds out of the President's, I don't know whether it was an executive order that was issued just earlier this week, I think, or maybe last week. That's a big deal. Because if we can't do it that way, we're talking 10 or 12 years of permitting, forget it. As you say, nobody's going to make that level of investment with the risk that there'll be nothing at the end.
One other thing. I mentioned geography earlier. One piece of geography that we haven't mentioned that's relatively unique for Maine compared to Delaware, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Rhode Island that are already also interested in offshore energy is that we have hundreds or thousands of islands off the coast of Maine. Castro Bay and Portland is also the calendar island, 365 there, but Maine's territorial waters are 3 miles from land, includes those islands. And so in terms of the test sites that we're looking at and in terms of other possible deep water applications, it's not just 3 miles from the mainland, which is primarily what you're going to see with New Jersey, Delaware, which is also shallow, of course, and Rhode Island and parts of Massachusetts, but in Maine, you may still be able to have a great amount of your permitting and risk issues done through state permitting and not exclusively MMS. And I think we've all learned from the this conference in the last few days. There's a lot of interplay that's going to take place between the states and the federal regulators, and it's really evolving. So there is some level of uncertainty at this point, and I think everybody's goal is to try to reduce that uncertainty.
Just quickly, that approach is consistent with what the Onshore Wind Power Task Force did last year, which was to identify areas in the state that we felt comfortable we could go forward with an expedited permitting process in, areas that did, based on their location, their scenic values, and the like. And so we streamlined the permitting process in those areas, and we're looking at something similar for the Gulf of Maine, recognizing, however, you know, what a huge area it is, and that we while we have a tremendous amount of data, we also lack a significant amount of data.
Yeah, I'd like to make a quick comment. As a company that is in the middle right now of going through the FERC licensing process for tidal projects, we are hitting these issues head on today. And we believe the biggest problem that we're going to have as an industry is not at the state level. It's going to be at the federal level. And it's going to be between or among several federal agencies that don't necessarily recognize the authority of the other agency and are not in agreement. And so what you get caught in is turf battles at the federal level for which you have no control. And there is going to have to be, if our industry is going to blossom, there's going to have to be real leadership at the federal level to get everybody in the same boat from in the same direction.
Any other questions in the back?
To kind of take the next step from the question that was asked previously and to what the Governor King said, in addition to having stable rules relative to permitting, installation, whatever, I think it's also very important to have incentive, financial incentives. Financiers do not come in unless there is returns, and returns can only come when there are certain guarantees, and we all recognize that for offshore wind to become reality, certain incentives will have to be put in place. I'm not necessarily talking about feed-in tariffs, I know that's a bad word, but other mechanisms can take place and can be very valuable in order for the investors to come in. I think if you look at the examples worldwide, you will see that those are the mechanisms that move things forward.
But it can't be, I think there's an issue there, it really has to be national. It's very difficult for one state to say we're going to pay much higher prices for our electricity because we're going to support the development of renewables and then have your, you can move 50 miles and make that change. I really think, again, we're coming back to a lot of this is federal. And you're absolutely right. There has to be some financial basis to have it make sense. But I think it's going to be very difficult to do it on a state-by-state basis because the inevitable competition between states drives it down, not up. So, well, we'll yet to be seeing how that's going to work out.
Question?
George, could you explain a little bit on what initiatives we're doing in ammonia in the state of Maine and how we can use that for transportation fuel?
Rick, as you might know, the concept of ammonia as a fuel has been one of Matt Simmons' favorites for quite a while. It's generally not recognized as a fuel. It has a long history going back to the 1930s, where it was used in buses in Belgium at the time. It was a fuel for the X-15 rocket plane. More recently, there are companies like the Hydrogen Energy Center in Algona, Iowa, that have researched the use of ammonia, particularly in diesel engine conversions. That has a lot of relevance to Maine right now, where ammonia as a fuel has a very high octane number, so you can crank up the compression ratios on diesel engines to the point where you start getting tremendous fuel efficiencies out of them. For island communities, and specifically Monhegan and on the island that you live on, there is a possibility of using this very strong winter wind to generate excess, quote-unquote, electricity, which is converted into ammonia, which can be easily stored, much like propane. What's the point of all of this? You can grab the energy in the winter in a very efficient way, bring it into the summer months when electricity demand goes up for summer people. We're looking into the possibility of actually running commercial boats of one type or another, logging boats, other commercial fleets in the state on that. It's a way to take this resource, which is 8 times stronger in the winter year, and efficiently moving it into the summer. So it's under very active consideration in Maine, and we'll probably, again, blaze a path for the rest of the world in doing that.
Any other questions? There are, and I was reminded, materials for a number of the people who have spoken here on this panel are at the back tables. So please feel free to look at the back tables for a number of the materials outside, both inside this room and outside in the hallway. Well, on behalf of the panel and the Energy Ocean Conference, I thank you very much for your time and your patience, and thank you very much for giving us that opportunity to speak to you.